You are listening to the Paranormal Chronicles radio show. Here is your host, paranormal researcher and author of the best-selling A Most Haunted House, Gavin Lee Davis.
Welcome, my name is GL Davis, founder of the Paranormal Chronicles and author of the best-selling Haunted Horror of Haverford West. Dare you read alone in bed at night? We are back for a brand new season of the Paranormal Chronicles podcast, based right here in beautiful Pembrokeshire, West Wales. I hope all of you are keeping safe at this time, and please know you are loved and your life is important. We will get through this. Thank you for joining me on my ongoing journey to explore everything supernatural, strange and bizarre. The Paranormal Chronicles podcast series is brought to you by sick-books.com. So visit sick-books.com today and start your paranormal reading adventure. If this is your first time listening, then please follow so you never miss an episode. Plus, all followers get entered into a followers monthly prize draw to win a fantastic book from sick-books.com. The last few months' winners have been notified, and Diane has won the Amazon gift voucher. Congratulations, Diane. Press follow now, download and listen to our huge archive of amazing content. Big news for us, we are now on Patreon. Become a VIP today and access ad-free and early access episodes. Have extra draws in the book giveaway, access to digital content, be part of an exclusive VIP Amazon prize draw, and get this, you get two free digital books, and one of them, yes, it's my controversial bestseller, Ghost Sex, The Violation. All of that for a £3 or dollar subscription. So head over to www.patreon.com/TPCVIP. That's patreon.com/TPCVIP. Go VIP today. Final announcement before we get on with this incredible show. I am thrilled and honored to announce that my fourth book is set for release. Harvest, the true story of alien abduction, is ready for pre-order. Release date, Halloween 2020. Three words for you. Terrifying, aliens, and Pembrokeshire. Pre-order Harvest, the true story of alien abduction by me, GL Davis, today from wherever books are sold on tonight's show. In a world of crisis, we all now than ever need hope and inspiration. I present to you the most incredible interview of my entire life. David Ditchfield is the author of the new book Shine On, the remarkable story of how I fell under a speeding train, journey to the afterlife, and the astonishing proof I brought back with me. David Ditchfield's story is horrific, terrifying, heartbreaking, but an incredible story of hope, growth and miracles. Not only did David survive his horrific ordeal, he experienced a detailed journey to the afterlife, returned, and now, can you get this, he can paint incredible art and compose symphonies that sell out concert halls. He couldn't do that before. What happened to him in the afterlife? David has kindly allowed us permission to play one of his compositions, The Divine Light, at the end of this interview. You will be listening to music not of this world. Shine On is currently the number one book in near-death experience and reincarnation in America at this time, and can be picked up wherever books are sold, or visit www.o-books.com for more information. Let's do this. On with the show. David, I don't wish to sound ghoulish, but we need to address the elephant in the room. What happened that day at Huntingdon Station in Cambridgeshire, UK?
Okay, well, I was seeing a friend off. I'd been staying at my sister's for a couple of weeks. I'd come up from London and I needed to get a break. You know, I was going through pretty hard times. I'd hit rock bottom, basically, in my life. So I was up there chilling out at my sister's, and a friend that I just met came up to see me. So I was seeing her off on the train. I helped her on with her bags, gave her a hug and a kiss, and then we heard the emergency door buzzers go, and she said, oh, you better get off. I said, yeah, don't worry, I'm going. And as I stepped back, the bottom half of my sheepskin coat that I was wearing got caught in the closing doors, and they just slammed to the automatic doors, and I couldn't release the coat at all. It was completely jammed in there. So I turned round and shouted for help, hoping there'd be a guard on the platform, but there wasn't. There was no guard at all. In fact, there was only one other guy who was stood there who was seeing off his partner as well. And he said, take your jacket off, mate, you know, just take it off. And I knew there was no chance of doing that because this was like a real quality sheepskin, and it just wouldn't have come off because it was like the fur was going right the way down. I was wearing a jumper, you know, it was just jammed on me, you know, it was just too heavy to take off. And so I started banging on the emergency button either side of the doors, hoping that would open them, and then nothing happened. And so I started hitting on the glass, hoping there may be a guard on the train, but nobody turned up. So I just looked into my friend Anna's eyes, and we just stared at each other. And I just saw the look of horror on her face, because we thought, this is it, I'm jammed. And the engine started to rev up on the train, and it started pulling out the station. And as it did, I thought, well, this is it, you know, I'm going to die. This is the end for me. It pulled off along the platform at great speed, you know, that they really go at tremendous acceleration, and you don't realize it until you're on the outside of a train itself. I lost my footing and I got dragged along the platform, and then next thing I knew, I was pulled down between the gap of the platform edge and the actual train itself, and I got sucked right in. And I went down, and I just heard this tremendous rip at that point. And then I looked up, and it was like the carriage door seemed to disappear into the sky. And I was suddenly pulled into this darkness, and then I was just tossed around like a rag doll, and I was bouncing from pillar to post, as it were, you know. And I was fully conscious throughout the whole ordeal. Next thing I knew, I was just kind of like sort of like thrown to the ground, and I was like lying in between the track as the train was still rattling over my head. And I just remember this darkness and just smelling the oil in the track, you know, and this tremendous racket above me. And I thought, it's not over yet, you know, part of the undercarriage could just come and whack me over the back of the head, you know, and that would be it. So I just kept my head down, and I just remembered all the Bond movies I'd seen, and him being in that kind of situation. I thought, just keep your head down. That's what Bond would have done, you know. And I did. It probably did save me, in all fairness. The train finally moved on. All that horrific noise just kind of suddenly dispersed into the distance. And it was I just lay there and looked up at the sky, and it was a beautiful blue sky. And I just looked at that sky and thought, wow. I'm alive. I've survived. I can believe it. Yeah. So
that's absolutely horrific. I cannot even begin to imagine not just the experience, but the fear, the pure panic and terror. And I could imagine these things just happen so quickly, and then it's over and you've just got the sense of relief. What was it like to stare death in the face? And I can't imagine what it must have been like to be dragged under the wheels of a speeding train.
Well, interestingly enough, time's dragged out. It's not like it goes in slow motion. The rail police did a massive inquiry on it. You know, they took the carriage all the way down to London and stripped it down to the last rivet, they told me. But they also measured up, and they said that it took 7.5 seconds from the point of the train pulling off and me going under. Now, that felt more like 7.5 minutes, because I was thinking it all through in my head. I went into survival mode, I guess. And a part of me I remembered seeing this news item where a small child had been thrown from a three-story apartment block that was on fire. And that child survived without any injuries. And they said, they put it down to the fact that young infants are totally relaxed. So when they land, they don't sort of break any bones. So I put myself into that mode. I just thought, just relax now. So that's what I did. So as I got pulled under, I just went into this, try to relax. And so the other thing is as well, is actually looking death in the face is actually not as bad as you think. It's not as, yes, it's terrifying. It's really very, very terrifying. But I think that the anticipation is far worse. If you'd said to me before, you know, 2 minutes before that point, you know, you're just about to be dragged along the platform, yeah, and underneath this train, I'd be going, what? No, it'd be far worse. So, so it's an interesting state of mind. And there's nothing new about that. You know, I started watching programs about the brain and how it works. And apparently that does happen when people are just literally thrown into a cliff edge, that their mind kind of like gets time to process what's going on. That doesn't undermine the sheer horror of it all. It was very horrific and very, very frightening.
Did you experience severe injuries?
My left arm was severed. From the elbow down, and that's one of the first things I noticed, because I remember seeing that this very high quality sheepskin coat that I talked of that I couldn't release from the door was now shredded, you know, all the way down the arm. It was just completely shredded. And then I just saw my arm was completely ripped open and took the worst part of it all. But in all fairness, again, the rail police couldn't understand it. You know, that they actually said to me once I finished their inquiries a year later, they said, "We can't get it. We're all banging our heads together here. You should be dead. You should not have survived that at all. You know, there's no way you should have survived." But obviously I knew by that point that I'd had a far more greater spiritual experience that I figured saved me that day. And there was something far greater.
Was there any CCTV footage that recorded the incident or anything you were allowed to see?
Yeah, they did. Cool. They recorded the whole thing. And in fact, the rail police said, "Are you okay to watch this back, you know, and to give evidence or whatever, you know?" And I agreed at first. And then I remember turning up and I said, "Look, I can't do this. You know, there's no way I can watch this back." And they said, "No, that's fine. We get it." I really didn't want to watch it back, you know, because I suffered an awful lot of post-traumatic stress disorder from the whole ordeal. And, you know, and I'm really glad I never watched it, because I know that would have come back to hit me.
So as a result of the accident, as a result of these horrific traumatic injuries you suffered, in your book Shine On, you say you had a near-death experience. You visited the afterlife. Now, everyone wants to know, what was it like there? What happened?
Basically, what happened was by the time the paramedics arrived and peeled me off the track and got me onto an ambulance, and I arrived in the A&E department, the emergency department of the hospital, it was at that point that I started losing copious amounts of blood. And I could hear the doctors and consultants running around very frantically trying to save me. And I just remember I was in a lot of pain by then. And I just remember everything was on overkill, the lights, the noise, everything. And I suddenly went from that frantic place to a far more peaceful place. And it just happened really slowly but peacefully. And I was there. I thought I was in a darkened room at first. And I was just lay there. And I suddenly realized there were these pulsating colors that were just all sort of like around me. I looked at these colors. They were like orbs, like giant orbs, and they were just like slowly pulsating, like yellows, oranges, greens, and blues. And I thought, where am I? Yeah. And then I suddenly realized that I was laid on like a huge piece of slate, like a big rock. It was like a medieval altar, if you like. And I was lay out on it, but it felt incredibly comfortable to be lay on this piece of rock. I pulled my head back, and I suddenly felt that there was a presence with me, you know, like there was somebody there. So I looked up, and just at my feet and to my right, I saw this really beautiful androgynous being, you know, neither male or female, just stood at my feet, wearing like a very sort of like, you know, contemporary sort of black t-shirt, if you like, and just smiling at me. And this, like, when I say smiling, the eyes were smiling at me, and I felt I'd known this being of light for all of my life, in fact, for more than that, from beyond, you know. There was like a soulmate. And she or he had this beautiful white blonde hair, and then this glowing skin that was radiating light from within. And I felt a sense of calm and protection coming from this being. So I laid my head back, and as I did, I suddenly realized that there were three grids of light sort of floating above my head. And I couldn't take my gaze away from this light, because it was like a pure white sort of healing light, I'd call it, you know. And it's the kind of bright light that normally you wouldn't be able to look into, like, you know, like a bright electric light or even the sunlight, you know. It was that bright. But I could with this, and I just didn't want to stop looking. And I just let myself be bathed in this beautiful light for a while. And it was at that point I thought, you know, this is it, I'm dead, and this is the next stage. At which stage I had absolutely no sense of, you know, fear or regret. I was quite happy to be there, because it was a much better place than what I'd just come from, and it was just really beautiful. I'm lying there, and then I suddenly felt the presence again, that there was somebody else with me. And so I looked up, I lifted my head, and I saw to either side of me two female forms. And one of them, white Caucasian, and the other one was either Asian or American Indian. And they were both just stood there and with their hands slowly hovering over my body. And they were like healing me. And I could feel this energy coming through their hands, and it was just beautiful. The only way I could describe it is just it's almost like a vibration, like of love, like this pure unconditional love that was just feeding through to me. And I thought, what's going on? Are they preparing me for something? And I had no idea. I looked down at my body and I realized that all my wounds were completely healed. My left arm was back in place. Everything was intact, you know, because I'd got no clothes on at that point, and I was just covered in this blue sheet. It was like a sort of like a really cool satin sheet that was just kind of protecting me. At that point, I thought, right, okay, if I'm dead, my family, who'd already arrived in the emergency department, are going to be like really distressed. They're going to be really distraught, you know. They were already in a bad place as it was, and after what had happened. So I remember looking over my left shoulder, trying to look over the edge of this huge piece of slate, and I didn't actually see my family. But what I did see was this beautiful vision. It wasn't a vision, it was a sight. It was a huge waterfall of stars, and it was like a massive arc, and these stars were just cascading down. And as I looked, there was like shooting stars just falling through the middle and dropping down into what looked like other galaxies, you know, into infinity. Yeah, it was really, it was an amazing sight. It was just spectacular. Of course, I realized at that point that I actually wasn't in a small darkened room at all, that I was actually in the universe itself, you know, and that I was surrounded by stars. So finally, I took some time looking at this, and then I pulled myself back over again. And as I did, I suddenly felt this energy of love that I was experiencing was suddenly turned up tenfold, and there was a new presence that was within surrounding me. And what it was this it was this huge tunnel of white light that was slowly closing in on me. And this pure white light was just so intense, but it was like surrounded by these kind of like these really powerful flames that were just rotating around the actual light itself. There was no fear again, you know, of the flames and the fire, you know, it was all very peaceful. I just thought to myself, this is God. This is the source of all creation. It's not, you know, the image of God that we're all used to seeing, you know, on the Vatican ceiling, you know, with a guy with a beard, you know, this is the source of all creation. I thought, and I just remember, I just laughed to myself and just put my head back. And as I lay back with that thought and with that feeling, and I suddenly then found myself crashing back to earth, and I was in the hospital, and I was there, and I was back into my painful body, and all the agony was all immediately returned, and all the lights and the noise were sounded even louder than before. Yeah, so.
This is just absolutely incredible. I don't think in my entire life have I heard such an account, and we haven't even got to half of it yet. So when you were in this place, was there any communication whatsoever? Was there other voices in your head, other communications going on, or was it all just all silent up there?
Yeah, it was all silent, and it was I felt a lot of education coming through in form of telepathy, if you like, you know, that, like, for example, my realization that this whole energy force was the power of God, you know, that was where it was all coming from. And I realized that after my NDE, when I came back, especially at the beginning, I felt like the part of me was still attached to that other world, and I felt like there was communication still coming through from that side, which I now call channeling, you know, and so ideas and thoughts were coming through. Unlike, yes, some people do say that their guides or what have you do communicate with them verbally, but no, not in my case. There wasn't actually a verbal communication.
This incredible interview continues after these important messages.
Is the poltergeist syndrome the only type of paranormal phenomena that can really be proven? Read Poltergeist, a new investigation into destructive haunting today. Available on e-reader and wherever books are sold. visit www.sixth-books.com for more information.
Become the alchemist of your world. In The Secret of the Alchemist, Colm Holland reveals how you can discover the power to miraculously change the world around you beyond all recognition and for the better. Colm will tell you the story of his encounter with Paulo Coelho and his best-selling book, The Alchemist, and how discovering the secret gave him the insights to achieve true empowerment in his life, and how you can too. Read The Secret of the Alchemist today. Available from wherever books are sold. Visit www.o-books.com to learn how you too can become the alchemist of your life.
This is Jason Bland, host of Midwest Paranormal Presents Paranormal Soup, where we stream live as a webcast every Sunday night, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, with guests who will blow your mind. Live ghost box sessions where you can call into the show to see if the spirits will talk to you. And the World Wide Web of Weird, with the latest in paranormal news and evidence. We're bringing the weird every Sunday night, 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. Don't forget to follow and subscribe.
Are paranormal entities assaulting us? Ghost Sex, The Violation is the best-selling true account and study of paranormal sexual abuse. Ghost Sex, The Violation by G.L. Davis is available on Kindle and through Amazon. Pray this never happens to you.
What if the after effects of a near-death experience were undeniable? What if a person could suddenly produce high-quality paintings of the afterlife, or if they acquired the ability to compose classical symphonies? Read Shine On, the remarkable story of how I fell under a speeding train, journeyed to the afterlife, and the astonishing proof I brought back with me. Read Shine On today on e-readers and wherever books are sold. Visit www.o-books.com today.
Does Genesis teach that the human race was created by God or engineered by ETs? Read Escaping from Eden today from wherever books are sold.
It's GL here, and before we get back to the interview, did you know you can listen to this podcast not only ad-free but with early VIP access as a TPC VIP Patreon? As a VIP, you will get two digital books, including my bestseller, Ghost Sex, The Violation, to keep and read, plus digital content, two extra draws in our follower monthly book giveaway, and exclusive entry into a VIP Amazon gift voucher draw. This is the spooky part. All of that is just £3 or $3 to go VIP. So go VIP today so you don't hear ads like this again. Head over to www.patreon.com/TPC VIP. That's patreon.com/TPC VIP. On with the show. From your perception, from your belief, where would you say you had gone?
Right, okay. I would say that I went onto the next stage of life, the next stage of our journey, basically. You know, I'd never thought about death before. It never even came into my sphere. You know, I just kind of carried on with my life. I was living a day-to-day hedonistic sort of existence, you know. Now I realise that, you know, our souls are so powerful. We've all got powerful souls within us, you know. And there's no way that when we die that the light switch goes off with everything. Yes, okay, I think that the body decays and dies afterwards, but our souls continue on. And that is the next stage. That is the next stage of where our souls begin the journey, you know. So it's just part of a journey, and it's a very positive part of the journey. It's really beautiful.
Had you had any, let's just say, paranormal experiences prior to this?
No, not at all. Spirituality had not come into... Actually, there was one... This is very interesting, actually. There was only one incident, and this was like a few months prior to my accident. I'd gone up to visit my sister on another occasion, just for the weekend. And while I was on the train, I came across this elderly couple who was sat opposite me. And we got chatting. And the lady there said, oh, we're off to see a medium tonight. And I was going, okay. And she was very keen on telling me all about it. And I was very keen in not just keeping myself to myself. But she ended up giving me like this little A5 flyer, like a small poster for me to keep. So I took that with me, put it in my pocket. And I remember I arrived at my sister's at a point, and there was a lot going on. There was lots of happenings with my nephews and that. She was sorting them out. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to go and see this medium. So I went. And when I turned up, it was in a small spiritualist church. And I sat down, and there was lots of people there who'd gone to get messages from loved ones who passed on and what have you. And I had no intention of looking for a message off anybody at that point. But she did turn around, this medium. She turned around and she just said, "The man in the blue sweater over there, your life is about to change." I went, "Oh, okay." And I was thinking, what's this? You know, am I going to win the lottery? Am I going to get off with the girlfriend that I was chasing after? And I said, "In what way is it going to change?" She said, "They're not telling me." And she was holding her hand to her head like she was communicating. And then she said, "They're not. All they're saying is it's going to be big. Be ready for it. Be prepared. And you'll be supported." And I said, "Okay." So that was it. And so looking back now, I realized, well, pretty much soon after my near-death experience, that was a warning of what was about to come. That big change that was about to happen in my life was going to be that accident that I was going to survive against all odds. And my near-death experience, which was to change my life, you know, forever. So, yeah.
I don't think any amount of foreknowledge or preparation could have helped you in that moment, you know. But then again, you did say that all these things would come into your head, things that might sound a little daft were actually life-saving. James Bond, you know, what would he do? So yeah. Deep down in your subconscious, you were tapping into survival instincts. So maybe on a subconscious level, you were ready to survive. The notion of children, how they relax, they go limp to survive.
Yeah.
So in an odd way, deep in your subconscious, there was a level of preparation going on. After all of this, you find yourself with new gifts from spirit.
That's right, yeah.
So you have near-death experience-inspired paintings and near-death experience classical symphonies. Your debut near-death-inspired symphony, The Divine Light, premiere concert was completely sold out and received a standing ovation.
That's right.
So what happened? I take it before this, you didn't have this ability to draw and paint and create music.
No, I mean, I enjoyed drawing when I was a kid, but I left school without any qualifications and because of my dyslexia. So I didn't go down that road at all. And I played when I was younger, I played in a few bands, you know, three chord wonder sort of punk rock and roll bands, but nothing to the stage where I'd be able to write for orchestra at all. So it all came as a bit of a big surprise. But in saying that, it all felt like it was kind of normal as well. That's the odd thing about it, because again, I knew that I was being educated, as I call it, from the other side. They were helping me. I was channeling ideas through right from the off. I mean, how it all started was my sister came to see me in hospital the very first night after I'd been through like an 8-hour operation. And they'd given me my own room, which is really nice. And I was just nice and peaceful in there. And so she turned around at the end and she said, "Look, you know, as a sister would do, she said, is there anything I can get you?" And I said, "Yeah, can you get me a small A5 sketch pad and a pencil?" And she went, "Okay." And she went along with it, you know, and she brought it in. And I got the nurses to prop me up in bed because I could hardly move. So I could very faintly sketch this out what I'd seen, because I was so scared that I was going to forget it or lose it, which of course I never have done. But I've still got this very faint sketch that I did, and that turned out that was the basis for the first painting that I did. So once I was well enough, in fact, all the time I was in hospital, even though I couldn't move, I kept thinking to myself, "I can't wait to start this painting." I thought it's got to be a huge, like Renaissance style, big canvas, you know, like you're seeing walking through the Vatican walls, you know. So that was my plan, and that's what I wanted to do. And when I started doing that painting, it was quite remarkable because obviously I was apprehensive at first, you know, and I looked at it, I thought, "Can I do this? Can I pull it off?" But once I started it, it was just coming together with such ease. And I felt like I was being educated from somewhere else and I knew that somewhere else was the place I'd just come from, and I was being guided to paint onto the canvas. And I went from doing that one canvas to many, many more. You know, the music came about. That was basically because what had happened was a couple of friends that I'd met ran their own sort of Pilates yoga center, and they said to me when I was starting the first canvas, you know, they said, "Look, we've got a room, like an attic room, you can use for a week if you want to do your painting." And I said, "Okay," because I thought maybe I'll knock it off in a week, which of course I didn't. Yeah. And they loved having me there because people were coming up keen to see what was going on. And they loved the spiritual aspect of it all when I told them the story. So they said, "Look, you can stay." And I ended up staying there for 2 years, rent free. Wow. You know, they didn't charge me anything.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, so they're obviously very close friends now and stuff. They're in the book, you know, because they're tremendous. But anyhow, so when I was doing those paintings, one of the people who was going to the Pilates class was a cello player in the local orchestra. And we got chatting and stuff. And she said, "Look, can I use one of your paintings for our next poster?" I said, "Yeah, please do." So they photographed it and used that. And then I got to become friends with her. I started having spiritual healing. I discovered that because I was determined to find this little spiritualist church where I'd had that reading, because I wanted to try and find out about that medium that I'd met. And when I walked through the door, they said, "Oh, you look like you could do some healing." I was pretty, you know, mashed up at that point, you know. And they said, we don't normally say this, but we do spiritual healing." I said, "Great, so I'll come along." And while I was having those sessions, but some of the healers, they would be clairvoyants, and they get just little messages through at the end of the healing sessions. And I kept getting these one. Each one would be saying things like, "Oh, why am I seeing a violin on your chest?" And they'd say, "Oh," one of them would say, "I think you're going to write some music about your experience." So being a guitarist, I couldn't play anymore because my left arm got bashed up. And I thought, well, I've got this old synthesizer in the cupboard. So I pulled that out and started writing a few chords on that, thinking I was going to write a 3-minute song about what my experience, you know. But it started sounding like it was going to be more classical. And I remember I met the girl cellist for coffee one day, and she said, "What have you been up to?" And I said, "Well, I'm writing this piece of music." And I said, "It sounds like it could be played by an orchestra." And she said, "Oh, maybe we could do it," and then laughed. So I held her to that. I thought, right, I'm going to work really hard and pull this together. And I did. And then my brother turned around and he said, "Well, look, I've got this app that you can have, you know, and it's like a package, and you can, you know, drive it off your computer. And basically what you play on the chords that you're playing on your synthesizer, it will sort of translate it into notation," which is what I did. Yeah, so it was like I was able to play it in, then it would, you know, it would, because I can't read a single note of music to this day. So I was hearing all these instruments coming into my head, and I thought, "Well, that sounds like, you know, like a horn coming in from the distance." And then I'd find out, well, I need a French horn for that. So I'd end up writing all the parts, and then you'd have to name all the different parts and what it plays for and stuff. And then I just printed off this music and told my friend in the orchestra about it. She said, "Okay, we'll meet for coffee." And so she brought like the leader of the orchestra along with her. And they looked at the score and they said, "Yeah, okay, we'll do it." And to my amazement, I thought, brilliant, you know. And it went from that to the local press. You know, she said, "Oh, the local press normally do a little paragraph about the next concert. Are you okay to talk to them about your piece?" I said, "Oh, that'd be brilliant." So I started talking about what it was about, because it was about my near-death experience. And then it went from that to the phone kept ringing. And then it went from that to the BBC got in touch, and they wanted to come and film the rehearsal and interview me. And then it sold out 2 weeks in advance, which was tremendous. And so the orchestra were delighted. And then the concert was just really, it was like a magical atmosphere that night. And that's just not me saying it, because it was my piece being performed. You know, it was something that was unanimous, you know. And they finished performing it, you know, and we had, my family and I had front row seats given to us, you know. And my mum just turned around with tears in her eyes, said, "That was just beautiful." And then we hugged. And then, it was really, you know, really wonderful moments. And then my sister then was going, David, look. And I looked over my shoulder, and there's a standing ovation. It was like, what? So yeah, so it was great. That inspired me to write more. And I mean, well, in fact, I was just from that, you know, I was commissioned to write more pieces, and so it just all spiraled from there. But to this day, everything that I do, every single painting and every single piece of note of music that I write, I still know that I'm channeling all the ideas through. So it's only a part of me that's actually creating all this, and you know, I'm getting this through from somewhere else, and wherever it's coming from, you know, I always sit back on a good day and go, thank you so much. Yeah, I thank them, you know, because it's just it's amazing how this is all coming about. And you know,
would you say that the life you have post accident has been more fulfilling for you, has given you a new purpose? I know that you've gone through some horrific trauma, you know, not just physical, but obviously the mental trauma, yeah. You know, would you say that your life now is more fulfilling than the life you had before the accident?
Absolutely. It's a complete contrast. It's almost like this life now is like, you know, pure technicolor compared to my life before, which is all very gray matter, you know, very dark. And you know, my life was just one constant struggle. I was beating myself up, you know, throughout my whole life. I mean, I was just kind of felt like I was one failure after another. And I was drinking heavily, and it doesn't help to sort of, that was my way of kind of trying to quell the flames in my life and try to deal with everything that was going wrong. But obviously that it just made it worse. And I was just spiraling into debt as well. So yeah, my life before was just, completely, I suppose, linear as well, whereas now it's a lot more three-dimensional, you know, there's a lot more depth to it and stuff. You're absolutely right. I had to deal with I'm a physical being, you know, I had to go and deal with all the mental trauma that happened. It didn't hit me until 6 months later after the accident that I had post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, I remember the hospital when I was lying in there, you know, they actually sent like a psychiatrist or whatever around to see me. Because of what had happened, and like he was just kind of saying, well, yeah, he seems fine. But a lot of that was to do with the fact that I just had this amazing experience, and so I just felt completely positive about life, and it didn't matter what had just happened to me. That's all. But obviously that came back and hit me later on. So but generally speaking, all in all, my life now is just it's a complete contrast. Yeah,
it's incredible, and I'm so glad that you've recovered and found a purpose and you can express yourself creatively. I love this notion that you're very humble about it. You've been somewhere and come back, and you are in a tiny, tiny percent of people that have seen beyond the veil.
Yeah, it's true. We'll all get to see it. That's what I feel, you know. We'll all get to see that beautiful. In fact, I lost my mother last year. And it's amazing how much it helped me at the point that her passing, that I actually said to her, you know, I said, well, Mom, I know where you are now, and I know how much you're going to love it there. And it's, you know, that's how much I totally, you know it and believe it to be true. And it's, you know, it awaits us all. Yes, I got to, like a percentage of other people got to go and see it. But I believe that that happens because each one of us that does come back after a near-death experience, it becomes a part of your life. You can't, there's no going back on it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, there's no denying it. And if, you know, one or two people I know who've had near-death experiences, you know, every now and again, they've had bad days where they've done interviews or whatever, and then they suddenly get trolled online where people are saying, oh, you're a complete fake. And it upsets them, you know. But I always remind them, say, look, you know, that's going to happen. That's where we live now. And of course, there's going to be skeptics, which is fine. You know, I mean, I've done interviews where with skeptics, you know, with scientists and stuff. And everyone's entitled to an opinion. But I mean, it's not something that anyone who's had any death experiences wants to preach. We're not trying to say, look, you know, you've got to follow this. It's just we're literally messengers saying, look, this is where we've been, you know. Let's face it, death is a taboo subject, you know, in Western society, and which is kind of crazy, you know. It's like, because it's going to happen to us all, we may as well not talk about it over our morning coffee every day, but let's just chat about it and, you know, get it out there. So, yeah.
What do you think near-death experience can teach us about how to cope with crisis? And do you think we all have guides and angels or these beings that we can call upon?
Yes, we definitely do. All of us have them. It doesn't take a train accident or a near-death experience to realize that we've got them. But we never get a chance to stop and realize it. And now is the perfect time with what's going on with this pandemic. I mean, yes, of course, it's awful that we're losing people. People are dying. But, there's another side to it all, and that we've all been given an opportunity to stop. The world suddenly just granted this halt. Well, a lot of people are actually. It's quite lovely to see people are, they're baking bread and, cakes and teaching their children back at home. And nature's, starting to sort of group up and live side by side with us. It's all really quite beautiful, So I think that, a near-death experience has taught me that we can
It's Barry Sheen. Barry Sheen is here. That is amazing. Guys, come to visit.
That's my moment where I just said that we're all slowing down and enjoying the peace and being at one with nature. And then Barry Sheen goes. So yeah, but so yes, we've all got our guys, and I think that it's worth us all knowing that and not being scared to call upon them either, because that's another thing about Western civilization. Well, lots of civilizations that prayer sometimes can be put into this kind of, you've got to go in with a sense of I'm not worthy, but please can you help me please can you forgive me? Whereas I don't think it should be like that. I think that your guides do want to help you, and I think you can just call out even for the simple things, even if it's like, I'm really nervous about, this guy coming around, a friend of mine today, and can you just help me to sort of get my confidence back up to deal with this scenario or what have you? And they will help if you call upon them.
Well, you can help me now, David, because that is an area in my life that I struggle with. There's a lot of chatter in my brain. It's a very restless brain. There's a lot going on, lots of thoughts, lots of ideas, lots of concepts, lots of negativity, lots of positivity. That's just the circumstances of being a bipolar middle-aged man, former alcoholic who had a mini stroke. Nothing compared to what you've gone through. And I find it difficult to hear that inner voice. How do we do that? How does somebody like me listen to the guidance of that inner voice, if there is such an easy answer to that?
Well, there is, and it's self-love, because that's what I learned. I had no self-love whatsoever before, and when I was on the other side, I was given so much love, as I talked about, so much unconditional love, and I lost all sense of guilt. I remember when I looked over to see if my family were there, I didn't feel guilt, and oh my goodness, I've messed up again. I was just chilled with it. And so it's just, you've got to give yourself some self-love. And also, you just said to me, oh, it's nothing, what you've been through is nothing like what I've been through. It is, it's all relative, that I don't see it like that. I don't see, I went through a much bigger thing than you. That's simply not true. We both hit the dark night of our souls, as it were. But the thing to remember, I'd say to everyone as well, is that out of all adversity comes a positive change. It can help you to go deeper within and to get in touch with your higher state of consciousness. And we can all do that, because buried beneath all the layers, we've all got these beautiful souls, each one of us.
You are one of the most incredible, resilient, thought-provoking and wonderful human beings I think I've ever had the pleasure to speak to, David. Now, that is genuine praise. I think you're absolutely incredible. Now, we've talked about the accident and talked about the near-death experience, and we've talked about these incredible abilities that you have shown afterwards. But there's one question I know a lot of people want to know, and that is, what happened to the girl on the train?
We kept in touch, our lives progressed. Our relationship became incredibly close after that, because we both knew that we'd been through something really quite intense. So there was an extreme bond between us that continued on. And that relationship is actually written about in Shine On, because it's also part of the story. It's because it was also, book deals with me dealing with that side of me that wasn't very good at relationships, full stop. And that accident and that relationship I had with Anna, who's in the book, you know, became a lot more, shall we say, authentic, you know, and very powerful, very strong. Yeah,
absolutely wonderful. Now, where can people read Shine On, and how can people contact you to find out more about Shine On and your incredible work, your paintings, your music, and so on?
Right. Well, it's now available for pre-order through Amazon. So that's your best bet. If you want to pre-order it, please do. That'd be great. Any information you want to find out about me, the best thing to do is go to my website, which is called shineonthestory.com. And all the links are on there. You can listen to the music free of charge for the first piece I just talked about. And then all my paintings, you can access the paintings on there. And all things like the, you know, my Facebook page and Instagram page, where if you want to follow me, that's great, because that's like a community that's growing. Then I keep everybody updated as to what's going on, like interviews and up and coming things. And obviously I put my paintings up on Instagram as well. And so, yeah, so please go to that. So that's shineonthestory.com. That's probably your best bet. It's all on there.
Shine On is available wherever books are sold. It's on Amazon. It's on pre-order at time of recording, but it is at the top of the charts. It is the number one new release in America for reincarnation and near-death experience. It is huge. This book is absolutely phenomenal, okay? Visit shineonthestory.com for more information about the book, about the art, about the music, right? And Shine On is an incredible book. Shine On is something most of us could only imagine. Shine On is that book that gives us hope, inspiration during our most difficult times. And today, as we record this, the world is in crisis. And now more than ever, we need stories of hope, of recovery, of growth and self-love. And Shine On is that miracle in written form. David's life is a miracle. And Shine On, available from wherever books are sold, is part of that miracle that you can be part of. Rise like David has. Rise and grow and reach for the light. Shine On is truly astonishing. Don't take my word for it. Read it. It's on e-reader, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Hive, wherever books are sold. Head over to shineonthestory.com for more. This guy you've just listened to, he is one of a kind. So David, thank you for your time. Please, could you leave our listeners with a final thought, just something to leave them with?
Well, ultimately, do not be afraid of death. Talk about it, think about it a bit more, as I say, and just know that the soul lives on. And when we all reach that stage, it goes on to a very, very beautiful place. I can assure you, you're going to love it.
Everyone, that is a wonderful sentiment. That is David, author of Shine On, the remarkable story. Actually, you say it for me, because it's quite a mouthful. Go for it, David.
I'm more dyslexic than you. Shine On, the remarkable story of how I fell under a speeding train, journey to the afterlife, and the astonishing proof I brought back with me.
Now, if that's not Ron Seal, nothing is. That is exactly what the book is about. It's an incredible book. David, thank you so much. I will have you back on very soon, because we've got lots more. We've got more rabbit holes to go down to. Please keep safe, sir, and thank you so much for your generous time.
Thank you, Gavin. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
There we have it. What do you think happened to David? I think we can all agree that something miraculous has happened, and David Ditchfield is the epitome of resilience and determination. His art, his music is incredible, and will give you goosebumps. I'll play some of his music in a moment. Please visit shineonthestory.com to see his incredible art. Please read Shine On and support David. Shine On will inspire and motivate you. It's a book we all need at this time of our lives. Let me leave you with this. David's life is an example that we can overcome almost any ordeal, that we can rise, face the sunlight, and shine on. David is a humble man, a beacon of hope to everyone out there. Please know, no matter what you are feeling, your life is important. Your life matters, and you too are capable of amazing things. You too can shine on. I'll leave you now with The Divine Light, composed by David Ditchfield. It's haunting, it's beautiful. I am GL Davis. This has been the Paranormal Chronicles podcast. Thank you for listening. Sleep well.